The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
Raised on songs and stories, heroes of renown, the passing tales and glories that once was Dublin town, the hallowed halls and houses, the haunting children's rhymes that once was part of Dublin. In the rare old times, ring a rosy, as the light declines, I remember Dublin City. In the rare old times.
Welcome along to the GAR. This is the football show on a Monday. Conan's here as usual. How's it going, Conan?
Great.
And we have Dennis Bastick, our special guest for the day. Dennis, how's the head?
Not great.
That's perfectly understandable. So we got rid of Keane Ward, who's a Mead anti-Dublin bias, and we got in Dennis Bastick. So we're really balancing.
Dipping it from one to the other, yeah.
So come here, how did the celebrations go last night? Or
yeah, it was good crack, yeah.
Did you go to the Gibson or did you stay out of it?
Set out of Gibson and met up with the guys afterwards. So
right, yeah. In Coppers.
In Zico and then on the Coppers.
Right,
yeah,
okay.
It was messy.
So thanks for getting into
messy.
It.
Sure. Just about.
So this is a sensational time to be a Dublin ex-player, Dublin supporter, Dublin player. Like, this is a dominance like we have never seen a dominance before. This is four in a row and odds on to do five, even though none of them want to talk about that, which is understandable, the night of the All-Ireland. Six of the last eight All-Irelands, five of the last six National Football Leagues, 13 of the last 14 Leinster Championships. Their winning average margin this year was 12 points. Now, that is skewed a little bit by Wicklow, Longford and Laois and Leinster, and that's probably not fair. But, like, Dennis, this is beyond your wildest, probably Dublin fans and players' wildest dreams.
Yeah, it's just breaking records. Well, every record that's ever been done, they're just coming along and smashing it. So.
Yeah.
It's really impressive to have that focus and drive that just stays going.
How are they doing it though? Like, I mean, is this, like, I was reading a stat today. So the four in a row, the first one of four in a row is 15. Sorry, the average age of this team is 6 months younger than the first team, which is unprecedented. Like, yeah. I mean, this is not the same team doing this.
That's the big thing. It's this is the fourth All Ireland now, and there's a couple of guys coming each year. So we had Niall Scully last year, Conn O'Callaghan, then we had Brian Howard on Merchant. So a couple of fresh blood each time.
But that's the good management, right, from Jim Gavin. Because, like, Paddy Andrews, like, he did nothing wrong. He was a starter all last year. He didn't get even seen.
Started in the final last year.
Started final last year. Paul Flynn doesn't get a run. Bernard Brogan, probably understandably. Like, he's cutthroat. There's no sentiment with him at all, is there?
No. It's gone out the window, no. But, look, it's working, you know. So what he's doing is working, and the guys are winning, and That's all. Not all that really matters, but that's what he's there to do. So
yeah,
he's doing it well.
Well, that's it. Six months younger.
But isn't it mad? Like, the only team to back up an All Ireland title was Kerry. Like, all the way back to 1989-90 when Cork did it. Nobody did it then apart from Kerry, who did it once in 06-07. Now Dublin's come along and done four in a row in this era where everyone's gotten more competitive and they're all more athletic and, you know, they're all more conditioned, and Dublin have just come, said, never mind, two in a row, we've got four in a row. Like, only one team managed to do that in three decades.
Yeah. Kerry did it with changing managers.
They changed managers, which gives you that lift. Yeah, you have to prove yourself all over again. But you have to prove yourself with Jim constantly as well, Dennis,
every
I'm sure.
Every night you go out, yeah.
So, like, what is this? So, like, why is Flynn not getting a run? Because when I saw him this year, he looked like he was doing well. Is he obviously not doing well in the A versus B? And is Jim based the picking of the panel and the 26 of this 15 versus 15 in the A versus B?
Look, it's very hard. When you're on the outside, it's very hard to, and everybody makes comments about what they think or who should be playing, but unless you're there every day seeing what's going on, it's, you're only guessing, really.
Yeah, but does he put the stock in those training games? Do you know? Cause like,
a lot of stock goes into how the game is developing on the day.
Right.
So like everyone's lined up or whatever, he has options. And then I think it's how the game is panning out. So you had Johnny pulling up a cramp, Keane or Sullivan going off. So there was decisions there they had to make.
There was two defenders in, yeah, which mightn't have been planned for. Although Daly usually gets on, doesn't he? Daly and Fitzsimons usually get on.
Eric Lowndes got on,
yeah, and kind of pushed into the forwards. But like, I mean, that would have been three defenders, yeah. So that was it. That was probably the reason that Flynn didn't get in. But this is the thing. So like, I mean, everybody's talking about the Dublin dominance and the different generations of players, and is this ever going to stop? But like, I mean, it was pointed out on Twitter last night, I saw, that this team is backboned by an absolutely exceptional under 21 team, and that same under 21 team lost the minor final to Tip in 2011. So off that under 21 team, 2014, they hammered Roscommon in the final. They got John Small, Jack McCaffrey, Brian Fenton, Eric Lowndes, Niall Scully, Paul Mannion, Cormac Costello. Conor McHugh was on that as well, scored 1-6. Davy Byrne, who was on it the last years, and he seems to be a forgotten man as well, he was on it. And Kieran Kilkenny missed it because he's in Australia. What kind of a generation of that team? So like, I mean, people are worried that this dominance isn't cyclical because it's going on so long, and we talk about the money that's put into Dublin, but like, I mean, that's near nine players that you're getting off one team. Like, I mean, like other counties, even small counties, wouldn't be dependent on one team to that extent.
Yeah. Look, it's not writing off the next crop of players that are coming up, but I don't think the talent that those guys have, like your Kieran Kenny, Paul Mannion, like they don't come along too often. We're lucky they did. They came along when they did. I'm not sure whether we're a strong currently at the moment at underage. We don't seem to be winning as many titles, especially in Leinster. So that's kind of, that's your sign to see of what's actually coming through. So
see, that's the thing. But because you're backboned by all these brilliant players, that you only need one or two off these. So like, even if you have a Dublin under 21 team that doesn't win, you'll get Merchant and Howard off them. Do you know? And that's the scary thing, that Dublin only need, a bit like when Kerry were doing well, they only needed one or two new fellas every year.
Yeah, and that's what they've done. Like 2010, they won under 21s, 12, 14 and 17, and they've got 13 starters out of those teams. You go back to 2010 when they had Cooper, McCarthy and Dean Rock. You know, so they had these boys coming through, so they are just taking now one or two outside of that big generation.
Yeah.
Their most recent one, Merchant, Howard, Conor Callaghan. So they add on these boys who also turn out to be superstars, but they don't need seven of them to come in anymore. And they've only won, what, one minor title in this time, 2012?
Yeah.
So they haven't had to win the minors, like, it's just getting those one or two players through.
So, like, I mean, it's a weird one with the, like, we talk about the money, and I'm sure you're aware of that, because even Cluxton mentioned it in his speech yesterday, which I thought was unusual. He said, what was it, to the officers of the county board and the staff of Parnell, we'd like to thank you for your endless work, your dedication to the team, and regardless what people say about money and population, to put these teams out, really, really go as hard as we can. So like, I mean, are the players aware of this kind of thing, that the GEA did target Dublin because GEA wasn't going well in the county, and they targeted them with funding, government funding and GEA funding, and now Dublin are a monster, like, dominating the game? Like, what do you think of that, Dennis?
Look, I don't know enough about the figures and facts about the financial things. I haven't been obviously following
I'll tell you, they get the same funding as every other Leinster county combined. So they're getting the funding of a province. You have the population of a province. So this is what people are complaining about, that when Dublin needed that lift, they got it, but they're still getting it. You know.
Okay.
But,
so then if we flip it and say, if you put the same amount of money into Carlow, GA, no disrespect to Carlow or Wicklow, are you going to have the same result then?
Yeah, we'll probably see the population then. So you add the financial resources to the population and the tradition Dublin have, because let's be honest, like, counties with tradition are going to have more players wanting to follow on in that tradition than a county with no tradition.
Yeah, it's a very tough one at the time. Like, it was hard to really argue, because you couldn't not have a strong Dublin, say, for the GA sake all over Ireland. And I know now they're sort of doing that initiative in Belfast. You sort of do need to target where the big population is as well. That should sort of be skewed in the figures. It should show that you're putting more money into where more people are. So it's
pro rata. It's more money per person.
Like, I know we're worried it was created a monster, but at the time, do you want nobody in Dublin playing and them all playing rugby and soccer? Or
that's
you,
it. Is it before? Is it the increased numbers that are playing in GAA, and then just naturally then you get more good players then?
Yeah, that's it. And it's better organised, and there's more coaches in the schools and in the clubs and things like that. But I don't know if one, like, see, this isn't a criticism, Dublin. Who's going to say no to, who's going to say no to that? Like, I mean, that doesn't make any sense. It's just, it is a danger that this is just because of the natural population advantages, and, you know, Croke Park is not a scary place for Dublin to play, you know, that this could just keep going on. Like, you'll obviously love this, Dennis, but, like, yeah. I mean, when you're looking, and like the All Blacks even, like, I mean, it's just that's a domination, and whether that's going to be good or, like, I mean, is it cyclical when you're continually getting these two or three lads to add to the fellas that you have?
Is the All Blacks' success not a culture factor rather than money?
No, I'm saying All Blacks more dominance than the money thing doesn't apply necessarily to them.
Look, I think it's where the guys in the group have the problem is that they're going out, they're doing their best, they're working hard, and then that's been attributed to maybe financial stuff that's not in their mind, and it's not for them. Yeah. For them, that's not the reason they're playing, or that's not the reason they're lifting weights and doing laps and all that stuff, you know. So then it's hard to them to hear the commentary around the fact that they're winning because of money that was input into
it. And like that, obviously money is nothing to do with the blood, sweat and tears that they have to, and yourself when you're winning All-Irelands. Like, I mean, that's not the case. See, this is a GAA. So often people get this mixed around that this is a problem with Dublin. This is a GAA problem. They're the one that singled out Dublin above other counties. It's not Dublin's fault. Dublin made the best of the money and are organised. I think that, like, it definitely gets kind of skewed into people thinking that it's a criticism of Dublin, when how can it be? Like, what are you going to say? No.
Yeah, and I just, again, like, I'm just trying to think, what would we all do? Like, I completely get where you're coming from and where the criticism comes from and how it seems unfair, but it's just, like, that is where the population, I know Derry even, I think we're a third on the list of getting these injections because their city is pathetic. When it comes to GAA, there's only four or five clubs there, like, you know, and that's where half the population is, so it's like, target the place where the population is, so.
And it's not doing you any good.
No, it's not doing anything for us, like, that's the other thing. But
you have to use it right, like, I mean, because you can throw money at counties, and the Dublin County Board are professional, and they have a full-time CEO, which other counties don't, but Dublin can afford that, you know, so it's like, it's a constant kind of thing. They're doing things well because they can afford to do things well. Like, if Laois had that, could they afford a full-time CEO and transform the structures and things? You don't know, because we never had it. Or do you throw money at Laois and they go to waste it? They waste it all. it's a difficult one to know. And I do accept the point that this narrative can overshadow what the players are doing. And, like, they can only go out and win the All-Ireland, and they're an absolutely brilliant team. And you don't want it to take away from that.
Well, I think it is, isn't it, though?
But still, I wouldn't be doing my job if they weren't pointing out what is, like, clearly unfair that I can see. You know, like, from the GAA point of view again.
Yeah. Well, then it comes back to your point then. Is it Dublin's fault, or is it a bigger issue then with the GAA that needs to be looked at from their point of view?
Yeah, and they are trying to redress it. I spoke with John Horan last year, and, like, because the Leinster Council were giving Dublin money on top of all that, like, but he said they're phasing that out.
Yeah.
But the GAA development funding is still been skewed that way.
Yeah, I think the scary thing is just when you go up to the Kilmacud Sevens on Saturday, and, like, the club is massive and there's so many people there. So once everybody in Dublin is now engaged with the GAA, it is a real monster. Like, there's that stat that Ballyboden has more under-14s in Leitrim, so, you know, he did have to sort of start addressing all these people and try to get them into the GAA, but now it's like, shit, like, what have we done? We don't want that many people into it either.
Yeah,
like, some of the clubs are huge.
They're giants, yeah. They're giants. But, like, Port Laois get the same criticism in Laois. It's almost the exact same situation, only at club level, and it's looked upon, look at the population and stuff like that, and, like, I mean, they want Port Laois split into two, a lot of the other clubs. Yeah. Like, I can see where they come from. Like, I mean, when you see Port Laois playing a little village, like, I mean, it's almost unfair.
Yeah. With a primary school with two people in the year or something.
Yeah,
like that,
and,
so.
And I often think that those clubs have a closer bond, because when you say, well, we came up, went to school together, like with Port Laois, I didn't really go to school with too many of them because we came from the best lads from different years, whereas they might be dependent on like the same sixth class or whatever, or maybe the Dublin under 21 in 2014. I'm going to throw another one at you here, Dennis, and you can you can say I'm cynical now, I'm being a bit mischievous with this one, but James McCarthy texts Joe Brawley before the game. He says, Joe Brawley, obviously obviously went around blowing kisses to the crowd when he was introduced, the 1993 Derry team. So he says, Joe, I hope you enjoy your big day on Sunday. It's well deserved. I'm looking forward to seeing you. I have fond memories of that team. Now, James McCarthy was three in 1993, so I don't know what memories you would have had. Now, is James McCarthy playing Joe Brawley? Because Joe Brawley is a huge fan of Dublin. And I think Michael Dermacauley and a few lads kind of half know Joe, and they might float one or two things at Joe. And Joe's a huge heart and he might get carried away. I'm wondering, do Dublin play Joe Brawley to suit their...
Well, do we have proof of the text?
Brawley read it out on the Sunday game last night.
Did he show it? Did anyone see it, though?
They didn't ask. He just read it out. Yeah. He said it.
James McCarthy was... Looking forward to seeing Joe Brawley, is probably to get him a headlock or something like that. not to wish him all the best, I'd say.
Yeah, okay, but like Joe's a huge Dublin fan, and like, I mean, like, there's no doubt about that. So we leave that. I'm kind of enjoying the fact that James McCarthy might be just keeping Joe Brawley sweet, so Joe Brawley eulogises about the Dubs on the Sunday game.
I'm enjoying that the greatest team ever watched DVDs of the 1993 Derry team. Just
one thing about James, there's a great tradition in his family, and that gone back over the years.
That's the thing, yeah.
Definitely involved in that.
He would have been watching him, yeah. He would have. But I wouldn't mind, that Derry team wasn't even a likeable team. It was a big, like, Down was likeable.
You hold your Down. Tongue.
Right, okay. One other one. It was a classic. I don't know if you saw this, Dennis. You were probably at the game. Was Philly McMahon telling John Small to walk off slow? So it was caught in the cameras.
Everything's
going crazy in Croke Park. You're down to 4 points after penalty, and John Small stepped off. And instead of losing his mind and panicking, and Philly McMahon has the kind of sneaky, in a good way, kind of wherewithal to say, John, walk off.
Great leadership.
Wasn't it?
To think of that, to have the clear head to go and do that. And it was exactly what Dublin needed at that time, you know?
Yeah.
And he walked off slow.
Because I hadn't seen, I saw a tweet of yours showing the video of it, and I had seen John Small. And John, the one thing I love about John Small, like, he's such an innocent look on his face when he gets sent off. Like, it's almost like my heart goes out to this fella. Although I did think his second yellow, if it happened anywhere else in the field, it wasn't a yellow foul, but it was because of where Hart potentially had a goal scoring chance. That's why he got the yellow. But he just looks like he's distraught, and he probably
why
is.
Me, why me?
Yeah, why me? Why always why me? Always yeah, me? He wants a Balotelli t-shirt. But this is the thing, and the two Ballymun teammates just kind of smart, tell the young lads, slow this thing down.
Yeah, pure experience, isn't it? Like, I think there's, 7 minutes left, and it's just the start of injury time, and like they're about to be 4 points down, so Tyrone are on a bit of a roll here to come from 8 down. Dublin about to be a man down, so they really did need just cool heads, and Philly McMahon straight into action mode, like, here's what we're doing in response to this mess up.
Yeah,
great to see.
No, it was good to see. A couple of incidents in the game, lads, before we get into some analysis in a second. So we all agreed Mannion's was a penalty in real time. I wasn't sure, but then seeing the video of it, lads, it's a stonewall penalty. Yeah. There's no doubt McCann takes him out.
He's trying to kick it with his left and he can't because he's getting
pushed in the chest. Yeah, because I was thinking it was a case where, you know, when you're taking a shot and you're off balance and a hand goes on you. That's still a penalty because it can be very frustrating. Sometimes you won't get a free for that.
Yeah.
But like it was more than a hand on Mannion.
Yeah, look, it could have been blocked anyway, could it? If you didn't.
Oh, if you didn't do it, was a Hamsey coming across or Matty Donnelly that came across there?
There was somebody else on his boot.
He didn't need to do it, He didn't need to do it.
McCann could have even cut across to his boot rod and straight to the man. You know, there were two of them there. The keeper was there. I know Mannion's.
Mannion running down your neck.
Yeah, it's more easier said than done.
Cavan a penalty, another stonewall penalty as well. Philly just decided to wrestle him rather than go for the ball, and that was kind of it. So
it was a big call.
Yeah, it was a big call, but
because you don't usually get them, you know, refs sometimes have their eye on the ball and stuff like that rather than what's going on the square. So.
He was on the ball with that. He pulled Johnny Cooper up in the first half for pulling Bradley off the ball, which he had been doing as well. So he was kind of... A lot of refs are looking in now. You see a lot of them giving fouls for those ones, which is great for forwards.
Yeah.
Not ideal for the defenders. What was the other one? Oh, Johnny Small sending off. So it wasn't a dirty foul or anything, but he was going for the ball, but it was just because of where Hart was.
It nearly could have been a black card, which would have been a sending off as well, because he had the yellow. Like, so
it's just you can't do them type of tackles maybe when you're on the yellow. That's the thing.
I thought Conor Lane had a decent game. He missed Colm Kavanagh. Probably could have been black carded. Definitely could have been black carded.
Which one was that? I thought Lane did well too. There's no one talking about him.
Did he pull him down?
Yeah, it was almost like identical to the Sean Kavanagh one that brought in the black card all those years ago.
Right.
But he missed that. But he did have a good game, and he sort of went unnoticed, which is what you want referees to do.
Yeah, I think he went unnoticed as well because the game was never really in doubt. So yeah, there's no real true. Incident yeah. that is going to say, Jesus, that's where it changed or whatever. Like, the penalty was a clear penalty, and that did change the yeah. momentum of the game. So there was nothing. Like, let's be honest. We'll talk about it in part two. The game was over at half time. Yeah. Like, I mean, I was thinking of going back to Electric Picnic at half time. I was like, what come up here for?
But we've seen a lot of refs, you know, make the game come into doubt because of decisions that they've made, and, you know, just getting involved and they don't need to, and making bad things. It hasn't been a great year for refereeing, I don't think, so it's good to see at the highest level.
In the final, there was yeah. nothing really major. Before, okay, we're just nearly finished part one, but I have to ask you about the Leash trial, Dennis, because I talk about this on
you
the
do.
Podcast.
Maybe incorrectly.
Is it incorrectly? Oh. Come on, fill us in there, because I wasn't there that year. So
yeah, you told me that, or you said that Mikko dropped me, and that wasn't the case.
You went for a trial, but weren't on the panel, so I put two and two together.
I made 16.
Yeah. So what happened?
So look, I was down there trying out, and the phone call came from Dublin, and I went and met Mikko, and he said, I think you should go with them.
Really? That you should go with Dublin? But did yeah. you go down for one trial, no? Did
a couple.
You? Oh, you went down for
yeah,
a couple,
yeah,
right,
yeah,
okay.
I was down a bit, yeah.
But why did Mikko do that and not try to keep you a leash?
Because maybe Mikko was going looking to manage
Maybe
Dublin.
Maybe drop Maybe so, yeah.
It wouldn't be the first time he nearly went to manage Dublin. But that, okay, yeah. so that was it. So, like, I mean, yeah. I was just thinking, imagine, because we, in the context of when we, the way I say that, I'm kind of going, how the hell did that happen? Do you know what I mean? You end up winning four All-Irelands and... You know,
five
All-Irelands is right. You only missed out on this one.
You're adding two and two and getting four.
So that was it. So you went down for two trials. Then the Pillar got word of it and kind of got you back into the mix, and that was
it. Got a phone call off Davey Billings, and to come out and to train with the Dubs.
Okay, well, that's cleared that up, isn't that great? But I do tweet a picture of you.
Yeah, no, it's a great snap.
That is you.
Yeah,
so we can confirm that is me. He's hanging out.
I have a Dublin top on.
A
Dublin top on, yeah.
Right. So what's the Leash connections then?
Both parents are from...
Are they, yeah?
Leash, yeah. Okay. From Camras, yeah.
All right. From Camras, which wouldn't be a footballing stronghold.
All hurling,
hurling. Can you hurl?
No. dangerous at hurl.
All right, listen, we'll be back in a second and we'll do some analysis. Dear, great to finally get to interview you.
Oh, really, yeah?
why
is it great?
Why do you not do many interviews?
I don't know, really. I wasn't being asked to do a whole pile of
them. Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me? I know we spoke about the defensive side of things. If you're coming in and you want to be, if you want to be the Woolly Parkinson and just play for myself, and an inter-county corner forward isn't just hatching inside either. Unfortunately for you, Woolly, it won't last forever. You can ask ex-players that. You know that yourself, Woolly.
Yeah. Mine never started at all.
Well, that's neither here nor there.
So lads, we had a game for about 17 minutes, let's be honest. It was 5-1, and I don't know, it reminded me a little bit of the Leinster final against Leash, where Dublin weirdly looked nervous and they were kicking wides, and in that Leinster final I was thinking, Jesus, this couldn't happen, could it? And it was just they were waiting for a spark, and obviously the penalty was the spark. But was any stage in that 17 minutes, Dennis, you were concerned? It was
5-1. I was concerned. I was saying this is not going very well at all. We just seemed to be, you know, just a little bit confused about what was going on, and Tyrone just came and had a rocket of a start, and I think that was, they obviously prepped well and they went out with that mindset. But I think in what Dublin do, and they do it well, is they use their heads and they think their way out of a game. So when things started to settle down and the matchups were working and fellas started figuring out where everyone else was, I think it kind of just settled down and people got back on top.
That was the thing, and it was like Tyrone played some good football in that 17 minutes. Like, I mean, they left plenty of forwards up there. I don't know if that might have taken Dublin a little bit by surprise, but they were playing good stuff.
The movement was very good.
Yeah, Bradley's movement was excellent, and like, I mean, I don't know, Dublin almost looked like, how could they be nervous? Like, I mean, they've always but maybe like these in a row are weighing on their minds a little bit, Dennis. Would that be possible? Like, I mean, I know playing in Croke Park is no big deal to Dublin now, but an All-Ireland final going for four in a row, just that maybe adds that extra bit of kind of pressure.
Yeah, well, I think when you're going out with, say, a man marking job and matchups, you're trying to stick to your man, and then he has the upper hand because he knows what he's going to try and do. So I think that kind of maybe gives it a bit disjointed then at the start of a game. But I don't think nerves I think the guys are just well used to it, although there was three guys who were starting the first All-Ireland final, so you never know on their side. But I think they just got the grips, took a bit of time, and they gave up a bit of a lead, but they just do, Dublin do what they do. It's an 80-minute game now, so no panic.
That's the thing. There's no panic. And, like, I mean, it was 5-1 down, so then... That was after 17 minutes. Then Cluxton finds Jack McCaffrey with a sensational kick out. So it's basically Jack McCaffrey doesn't break stride. So when he actually catches the ball, his momentum brings it past McGeary and he's away into open space then. So Kilkenny gets a pint, 5-2. Then Dublin win the next three kickouts and they get 1-2 off it. Dean Rock, 2 points, and that was the Mannion goal. Yeah. And then a few minutes later to get the second goal, and this was from Myler needlessly pushing Johnny Cooper in the back. Johnny Cooper was going nowhere. There was two Tyrone lads converged on him. Cooper doesn't lie down the ground, messing around, gets straight up, gives it down into Conn, dummy solo, Scully goal. That's game over.
Yeah.
Like Tyrone, I can only, like, I often mention this in the podcast, it was the Leinster final in 07 and we were 4 points up after about 20 minutes, going really well, and we were flying it and our tails were up and really up for it. And then Dublin got two goals just before half time. When they got the first goal, the stadium erupted. Like, I mean, I can only describe, like, it's very hard to keep your mind. Like, I mean, I can imagine Niall Morgan, because we had Rory Began on the podcast last Thursday night in the Sugar Club, and he said Dublin's press is on a different level to other teams.
Yeah.
So Niall Morgan is standing over this. The crowd's going mad. You can't communicate with anyone because it's so loud. And this fella has to stand over kickouts under that pressure of Dublin's press. Like, I can see how these meltdowns can actually happen.
Yeah, and, like, what makes it harder for him is that no one, like, the rest of the players are feeling that and they're not showing.
They're not showing, yeah.
And everybody's hiding behind their men and he's just looking and there's more Dublin players there and he has to head down the middle. And
you need to have an out ball, like, that's so... If there's a trigger there, if you get in a goal or a couple of points or Dublin get a run, there has to be that out ball or that kick out.
Because Fenton messes that up because you've got a good fetcher.
Well, it doesn't necessarily have to be that long ball, but some sort of movement or something.
There's some play. It has to, because do you talk about that? Our goal, like, obviously the analysis is that the goals give Dublin that energy, but, like, I mean, are you talking as a group, when we get a goal, lads, that's when, you know what I mean?
I think you can sense things on the pitch. You definitely sense things. And when you get into a purple patch, you want to make hay, so you try and push on. But I think Dublin's press on the kickouts is it's exactly that. It's really hard to kind of break down. They're not really going man to man, they're going a lot of zonal, it's just harder and it's riskier then for the goalkeeper, and it's riskier on the back of after giving away a goal maybe a few seconds earlier. So it's just a difficult one to try and break it down. But I think it's very much mental, so the guys, they're not showing as hard then when they give up a goal. The crowd is lifted as well.
And that's human nature, isn't it? It's like, Jesus, you know, I don't want to be the next one to mess up. And that's like, you need leaders to be the lad that says, I don't care.
But if you look at, on that point, the leaders, look at it. When Tyrone were getting their run in the second half to bring it tight, those two big kickouts, Jack McCaffrey won one and Fenton won one as well.
Fenton won the one straight after the penalty. Bang, exactly. That's who you need. Yeah. He wasn't hiding. Do you know that kind of way? That's the difference. Momentum stopped. But this was pointed out last night on the Sunday game. It's so obvious when you see the replay. And it was for the penalty. So the kick out messes up and it goes straight to Kilkenny, who's unmarked. You see, when Dublin are marking zones for the kick out, if they win it, they're not being picked up. So their forwards are completely free.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, it's a knock on effect of marking this zonal one, that if you win it, Kieran Kilkenny, there was nobody within 10 yards around him. Yeah. Kieran Kilkenny. And that's because Dublin are into the zone. So, even on the risk of, like, not being able to win your kick out, you nearly have to be manning up on these backs. You know what I mean? They have you every way, Dublin do. They really do. Honestly, tactically, they just do at the moment.
And do you think after the penalty, certainly after the point after the penalty, like, Morgan or somebody should have just been down for 2 minutes and you're like, take the sting out of the crowd?
That's the oldest trick in the book.
Get Dublin's focus out of it. Like, the difference was McMahon, you know, going over to John Small and saying, you know, walk slow. Just that bit of game management. And when Dublin have that run on you and Tyrone players are freaking out, the crowd is bubbling, like, just lie down.
It is unusual that none of them lay down and Dublin got 2-3 to a pint. 2-6 to 1 in the last 50. From 70 minutes on, it was 2-6 to a pint at one stage. And no Tyrone fella kind of tried to break that down. That's unusual, though, isn't it, Dennis? Because, like,
that's when your head's not thinking clearly.
I think Colm Kavanagh kind of referenced that a little bit as well. Like, he kind of said that they maybe were a little bit surprised to be 5-1 up. Like, I mean, isn't that, it's just like
yeah,
but it's almost Dublin have come to, have got this fear factor now where, like, imagine throwing in an Ireland final where, like, I know the betting was 1-6, but I'm saying we were surprised it was 5-1. Yeah. Maybe that took us by surprise.
Yeah, and it's funny, but even like I'm watching it and Tyrone started getting this bit of a strut about them and they were trying these passes and I'm watching it going, Jesus, lad, just be careful, you know, we do, you don't want them simple to risk too much, like, but yeah, even like everybody watching, like every neutral is sort of, you know, they're that way inclined to say, let's not get carried away here. Like, you're still playing Dublin, you're going to end up conceding a shitload. And
they could have scored a lot more, like, they had a lot of wides and a lot of bad
16 wides to Dublin 6. And we know Dublin don't kick wides, don't, like, are very economical. Dublin had no wides in the second half. They kicked too short into the goalie's hands. Now, at the start of the game, like, Jack McCaffrey should have had 3 from play in the first 20 minutes. He kicked a terrible wide and another one into the goalie's hands and scored another one. Like, he's just magic, that fella. Like, the speed of him. Like, I mean, but he's... It's not just speed. Like, I mean, he's brave. He's like, you know, he's a leader.
The turnovers that he got were turnovers, a huge lift to the team. Yeah,
it's unbelievable. And this is marking a fella, McGeary, who's a hard worker and was picked there to mark McCaffrey. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, mark, I mean, a half back, yeah.
Mark a wing back. It's gas. Like, I mean, that's just the kind of fear that people have. But that's what Colm Kavanagh said. He says, we seem to go into panic mode, which is crazy to think because we felt we could manage the game if we went 5-1 up. Like, the whole thing was, an analysis was, can't let Tyrone get ahead of you. Like, they're the perfect team for defending
down
a lead, shutting it down. The other team gets desperate and they'll hit you on the break. But they went 5-1 up, which should have really been panic stations, and Dublin just kind of got themselves back into the game. And, like, I mean, it's different lads again. Like, against Mayo, it's James McCarthy standing up. This time, Kilkenny, McCaffrey, and they're just match winners everywhere. That it doesn't have, like, when you've got a match winner nearly in every position, there's 2 or 3 of them going to do it for you on every day, yeah. And it's swapped around with Dublin.
Yeah, no, look, that's the beauty of the team, and that's why they're winning so much so lately. So if one guy is not doing it, another guy will just stand up, and that's what you need. You need leaders all over the pitch, and some of the option taking maybe on the shots for Tyrone were poor enough. They were under pressure or bad shots or outside of the boot kind of stuff. So that's a high percentage shot you're trying to take, and it's not going to work. Maybe recycle, slow it down. And turn back. I know you don't like that one, but
Dublin don't do high percentage anymore. Isn't that something that's really come? Like, there was a stat before the final that Dublin have scored no point outside the 45.
Yeah.
So there's no taking on something that, you know, like, you'd be killed at underage level for trying one from the sideline. Said, no, I'd be shooting from impossible angles.
Yeah.
Dublin don't do that. There's no one trying to be the hero. Like, I mean, Jim Gavin's constantly talking about team.
If you're going training with a club or practicing, you should be practicing your shots from 30 yards out. That's where you want to be hitting the ball from the D, you know, and not, you see guys are training and they're rocking up and they're standing on the 45 meter line and they can't kick a ball over the bar, but they stand there anyway to shoot. So
you not to play those games in Dublin training at all, do you? We'd be over at the sideline on the 21 trying to put it over off the outside of the boot, like, I mean.
You do that on the way in, all right, but not
when Jim comes out. But that's the thing, like, I mean, and like, Dublin should receive no criticism for the way they play. They've become a functional team that beats these kind of defensive teams now easily because they don't take the high percentage shots, which the defensive teams are clearly trying to force you into. That's what they want to do. Dublin have sussed out how to play against these. So they're, like, I don't think Dublin are even panicked going. I think in a way they nearly enjoy picking apart these teams.
Yeah, look, it's you know, it's, the game itself has many different forms of tactics and breakdown. I think that the guys enjoy trying to figure it out and see what works best. There's a lot of work put in on the video work and watching teams and doing your homework, and then that just pays off then on the pitch where you can kind of pick holes and you know what guys are going to do and where they're going to run and how they're going to set up. So, but that's practice. It's practice over years. That didn't happen overnight. So
yeah. And is J.O. get a lot of the credit for this kind of coaching? Because we see a lot of loop moves into forwards now, real pronounced loops where Jack McCaffrey's sprinting down and Dean Rock's coming out around him, and Jack might take the contact, then throw it back out. You know what I mean? It's over. Dean Rock got 2 of the handiest points you'll see, because he always seems to get it just thrown back out for the finish.
They were good finishes on it. I think that's a harder one for a defender, because the defender's in two minds, whether does he go or does he stay or which runner does he pick up. So the guys are just, the timing is really good, the movement is good, and I think that's what they work on really well, is just if the ball comes into this position, this is what we're going to do.
Right, okay, so they've covered all bases. Yeah. That's basically it.
And it is very functional, but in a way they've made it look good. They've even made that look good. You see that one was the second last score of the first half. Dean Rock scored it, but it starts off in the very corner of Dublin's half and Johnny Cooper's hitting the sideline. And it takes like 69 seconds, which is a long time, but 15 passes. Brian Howard pings his lovely pass into the corner for Conor Callaghan. Doesn't work out, so they come back out, go over to the other side. Kieran Kilkenny tries to make an inroads. They come back out. Then it ends up getting popped in the lid to Dean Rock. Somebody, Michael Fitzsimons comes late, sort of does a little spin, pops it out. And not one time in those 15 passes did a Tyrone man get a tackle on them. One of them like got a push after the ball was hand passed away, but it was functional. But there was like, you know, a couple of nice kick passes in there, a couple of nice pieces of skill, and a great finish by Dean Rock in the end. And yeah, just sort of highlighted what they're doing so well, just moving around the whole pitch and like dragging Tyrone everywhere, and them not even getting a hand on them.
Yeah, I don't think Tyrone were as defensive as I've seen them before yesterday. Is that fair to say? Like, yeah. I mean, they did take the game to Dublin, but they created no goal chances outside of Kavanagh's penalty. Like, I mean. And that was Philly kind of pulling him down. But, like, without getting goals, you can't outpoint Dublin. This is the thing. And there's no team setting up in a way to score goals. Like, Galway had Comer in there. I thought that they would have given him more ball. They gave him hardly any ball. Even that's after scoring an early one. Because Dublin, the way they set up, they will give you one-on-ones in there. But, like, I mean, if teams aren't putting that ball in early, Laois are the only team that sent in regular diagonal ball. And the problem with Laois was that when O'Carroll and Kingston caught it, they didn't have enough lads up in support of them, so they couldn't really do much. And you know, Dublin defenders are good tigerish in a one-on-one, but you will win ball, you know what I mean, out in front. So like, I mean, are we going to see a shift in how teams are going to have to take on Dublin?
You can't just go and do that in a match, just put in a fella and start trying to attempt high balls. That you need to work on that for months and months.
And they weren't even good ball Tyrone were giving in. They were straight ball down, which in general shouldn't be a good ball, you know.
Look, anything, there is a bit of danger with them. Look at Comer's one, you just get a flick on and it can go.
They're hoping for luck though, you know, it's kind of like that.
Yeah, you know. But they're dangerous, and I think the high ball is a question there. But I think that could be danger in any team that you play against. There's always a risk there if you're getting the ball in around the 6 yard square, that anything can happen. So does a team need to get possession? So when you have a point man in there, if your team doesn't have the ball, he's just wasted in there too, because he's not getting the supply.
It is, like, I mean, I definitely think there's going to be a shift next year. I think Kerry will try to outpoint Dublin. I don't think they're there yet, but they'll play a three-man full forward line and give Dublin something to think about. The idea has always been to contain Dublin. Now that's proved that containing Dublin just does not work. So next year, can we see teams trying to score a goal or two? You know what I mean? Because this just doesn't work. You cannot contain them for that length, because you can't get scores. It's too hard for you to get scores.
And it is too hard to contain. There's too many players to contain. You can't do it. As you said, there's too many match winners there, so somebody's going to get through and they're going to get scores no matter what. And they're too sort of slick, so you can't contain them. Going back to sort of getting the goals, which is what you will need to do. Michael Murphy was good, saying you need to score over 20 points to beat Dublin. The Damon Comer one, the difference of that was that it was a pass. It was a high pass. It was flight it well. He was one-on-one inside. I mean, this lumping the ball in on top of...
was desperation sakes. Now, I do take the point, that is dangerous, especially if you're a dub and you're hoping it doesn't get flicked in. Like, I thought it was desperate, but like, I can see how you might... You know what I mean? You might think
it's...
The penalty,
You can play high passes in with people who are mismatched, like the Kingstons, you know, for Laois. You can find that sort of mismatch and use it, but then the goals that Mayo got against him were always coming from deep. You know, Lee Keegan doing those bursts from deep.
Yeah.
You can't really pick that up. It's hard to do.
Yeah.
Even Connolly, with all his hard work and tracking, you can switch off for half a second and you're gone. You know, so it's going to need to be something like that, you know, to get through. And like, listen, it's easier. Again, it's easier said than done. But you're right, like, it's too hard to contain them. There's too many elements to them, so we have to try and hurt them.
Yeah, what do Mayo do different than Dennis that seem to be able to give Dublin a really good game? Is it because they're physically a match for Dublin and can kind of front up to them?
Look, I think the tempo and intensity level, I think what Mayo bring to the game when they're playing Dublin, I think that's, they're almost matching Dublin in that area. And I think that's the big difference that you see some case with other teams, is that you can go and play well against Dublin for a period of time, but you don't have the legs and you don't have the strength to out-muscle them.
Yeah.
And then that's where you fall down. So Tyrone had a great start, and then it looked like not that they were huffing and puffing, but the sting was gone out, or the tempo that they were able to produce at that time was gone out of them, and Dublin got their part to them and went in, and they came back out strong.
But Dublin, even against Galway, who I didn't think was, they were a small team, Dublin just look a bigger team. Like, I mean, and against Tyrone, like, Tyrone are not a big team, so there was a clear difference in physicality yesterday, and I suppose over the course of 77 minutes you're just worn down. Like, I mean,
a lot of work and effort goes into that, and they've got a great S&C with Brian Cullen there, so that's worked on, and I think it's, you know, it's more power based now, and it's not just to get big and muscly and t-shirt wise and stuff like that. It's more game effective, so what you need to take the hits and take the knocks and get up and get on. And
it's power based in the legs, is it, or is it like a bit
all over? Yeah, okay, yeah, all over. So
that's the way it's evolved, isn't it?
Yeah.
So are some counties are still doing the bicep curls.
Yeah, some guys still doing them as well in Dublin, but it is. It's more explosive power.
Right. Okay.
And I think that's what the other teams are lacking in that area.
Yeah, because there's clear difference in physicality and ability. Obviously, Mayo are onto something. They have Barry Solon, and he was with Leash, and he's really good. He's over with Arsenal. So maybe they are onto the same kind of strength and conditioning that Dublin are, and that's how they can match them, and maybe other teams are falling behind in that science part.
Well, they've excellent players now as well.
Well, that's true, but they are able to match Dublin over the 77 minutes, which other teams just can't do.
And like, it probably that feeds into a mental thing then. It's Lee Brennan getting that ball in acres of space in the second half. All he had to do was one-on-one. This is the boy that we've been raving about, the skillful player. I think it was Cooper coming up his arse, and he didn't want to know. He ended up taking it out on a loop wide, and then he had this wild shot that didn't even go dead. Like, Cluxton came out and got it, and Dublin went up and scored.
Yeah.
You know, whereas he was one-on-one with his defender, which is a club level. I'm sure he's just tearing past boys, but didn't want to try it or risk it against Dublin.
No, because when you do, and you know this from being a player, that if I'm a forward and I'm going to take my man on, and I feel that contact, and I go, Jesus... Yeah. I might turn back at the, I'm not, you know what I mean, that's a little bit too strong. You just feel that.
I felt it in 2009 when we come up against Kerry.
That's really, you felt that resistance or that kind of
the different level. They were at a different physical than I was at that time.
So like, I mean, that's nearly a wake up call, isn't it? Well, it's for a forward, it's like, I can't take him on.
Yeah.
But I often find that with Kerry defenders at the moment, they're not big men, and if Paul Mannion decides to take on Paul Murphy, he's going past him. Whereas if you're trying to take on Colin Boyle or Lee Keegan, Paul Mannion might feel that contact and go, I might recycle this one. That's probably the difference. Because I don't think Tyrone did too much tactically wrong. I thought the Tiernan McCann on Kieran Kilkenny was a very strange one. He's a wing forward, wing back attacking. That was gone out of their play because he was watching him. And maybe they kind of were influenced by Lee Keegan being that attacking player. Like, I mean, Tiernan McCann's not a man marker for me. Now, he did all right at the start, but Kilkenny just wore him down and just ended up being very influential on the game. Matty Donnelly going on Howard. So there you've got Tiernan McCann and Matty Donnelly, two of their big players for running at you, and they're marking lads. Imagine Brian Howard, who's not on the team at the start of the year, and then has Matty Donnelly going wing back to go on him. And you have Myler then on Fenton. So Colm Cavanagh was picking up Fenton for kickouts, and then Conor Myler was blackguarding Fenton. Did you see that? Fenton was...
Got loads of attention.
Loads of attention. He was looking at the linesman going, what's going on? Because Myler was crossing the line, like, he was pushing him up in the neck and stuff off the ball. And then Myler went off and Fenton starts running him up then.
There was a good bit of that going on around the pitch, and I thought Dublin's discipline was excellent. You know, they could have obviously reacted at any stage, but they didn't. They took whatever Tyrone threw at them, just got on with it. That was really good discipline from them. Tyrone obviously came with a game plan to try and upset a few of the Dublin guys, and they just dealt with it.
They have that discipline, though. And like, I mean, like, they have cynical players. There's no doubt about that. Kilkenny's cynical. He'll wrap you up and hold you off the ball. Cooper, Philly McMahon, all these lads are. There's one thing about them is that when someone's being cynical with them, they don't cry about it. Like, I mean, Kilkenny could get dragged to the ground and he just gets up and they continue. You know what I mean? They don't. Yeah. They just almost accept that as part of the game, and we do it, and we're not going to complain when it's done to us.
Yeah, but everything they do is always just next ball. There's a picture on Sportfile of Scully's goal, and I think it's O'Callaghan sent him and Scully, and every one of them have planted their foot and they're going back, you know, and all Tyrone boys are just sort of reacting to the ball going to the net. But you can see the three Dublin lads just about to go back out and get into position and go again, never mind what just happened, whether it's something bad or good.
And that's what we touched on earlier, it was the case of the next ball, you have a chance now to put them under pressure again, so go after them.
So that's it. So, like, I mean, that's why they don't celebrate scores. Like, although Kieran Kilkenny celebrated one, his last one, did you see that? I nearly fainted.
That'll be his last one.
You get pulled aside for that.
But this, like, this idea, you know, of Donnelly and Tiernan McCann going back, like, I hate that idea of hammering the hammer. I mean, can you not just have something to stop the hammer? Because I think it's a waste of your tool, like, whereas you can be using Tiernan McCann and Matty Donnelly to cause a dent in the other team, whereas you're just wasting it to try and stop somebody else.
Now, McCann did get forward at one stage and got the point and then he pushed Kilkenny and he said something to him, and it looked like Tyrone were kind of really in a good place and up for it and everything. And but, like, I mean, like I said, like, I'd say Kieran Kilkenny's kind of GPS stats are off the charts, are they, Dennis?
Yeah,
like,
covers so much ground.
He always looks like he's wrecked.
And look at him there at the end. He was just
making that sprint.
Making that run from one end of the pitch.
My God. And in fairness, McCann did well to track that because, like, I mean, that was. It's hard to make that run as a forward, but it's even harder to track that kind of a run.
You're waiting for him to pull up and he
doesn't
pull up.
Yeah, he didn't pull up. And Kilkenny didn't really. Like, I mean, it was just a run. Like, there was no need for from Kilkenny. He just did it. Like, he did it. It was just incredible to go at that. I didn't realise, is he deceptively fast, Kilkenny? Because, like, I mean, he's fast, but he like, when you see McCann not able to catch him there, McCann
he's a powerful, strong runner, and he has this ability to do it over and over again, so he's not slowing down throughout the game, so he's still keeping at that same pace all the way to the finish.
Yeah, he's built like a tank now as well. Like, he's turned really, really stocky. Final word on Cluxton here, because he had 26 out of 28 kickouts, lads, that found his man. And there's the reality. That's the difference. Like, there's no point in saying anything else. That is the difference, that these kickouts now have become so important that they're power plays, and that if you win them, like we've said with these zones, there's immediately something on. There has to be, because everybody's everywhere and they're not being picked up. So Cluxton's not getting caught out. And there was one that I remember that went over the line, was to John Small. And that wasn't even Cluxton's fault. John Small was flat-footed, and by the time he turned, he wasn't able to reach it, but it wasn't a bad kick out. It was perfectly fine kick out. But, like, Cluxton can stay playing for another 5 years if he wants. Like, he's still agile. And he's remember from Parnell's, he's as fit as an outfield player. Like, I mean, he's dedicated. Goalies, let's be honest, don't need, like, he could play at least 50. Like, I mean, this
I think Jim would have him there as well if he could.
Oh, he would, I'd say, yeah.
Yeah, what's really impressive with the kick out is the next ball, you know. So any time they went short, they always seemed to be able to find the next ball and get it up the pitch high. And I think that was really important for them. So not only are they winning the first size possession, but they're getting down the pitch quite quickly as well. So.
Right. I remember being told in the Pillar Caffrey era, that was when I was playing, and I remember the big thing then was Shane Ryan and Kieran Whelan used to break to the wings for them.
Yeah.
And remember being told that huge amount of work doesn't go into this, that basically Cluxton stands over the ball, he needs movement, and he'll find whoever moves. And that's kind of it. Like, I mean, sometimes you might think there's a huge science behind this. You see Cluxton a lot, I see no signals, like, so it's hard to read into, like, is, do you know, a goalkeeper could wipe his chest and that's a signal for a certain player. It's just crazy movement, and everybody, like, be responsible for getting free, and you know you're going to be hit even on the run, like McCaffrey was.
Look, he makes you look good, you know. If you make a run, he finds it. You know, there's very little time where you're maybe checking your run or going backwards, whereas you might, that'd be the norm where you might make a run and then it's the ball's going back one direction or it's going closer to your man than you. And
So
I think that's where the stats are so high, because he's just so good at getting the ball out, so good.
So, like, if you break to the outside, you know, with some bad passes, they might go off the outside of the boot and come kind of go the line of your man and make it look like he's been out in front of you. But Cluxton never does that. Like, I mean, you just break. And the thing about it, Dennis, from being a midfielder, like, you can break back, you can break forward, you can break record left or right. Like, it must be very difficult for fellas to actually tie you down, because if they're marking you from the outside to cover your run to the wing, she'll just break towards him.
Well, that's it. The gaps open up in the pitch. Croke Park is so big, and you find those holes, and then he's just popping them into the holes. So, and that's why you see Fenton getting on a huge amount of ball. His athleticism can get him to anywhere he wants on the pitch, and there's lots of space then for him to run into.
That's the thing. And so who's giving you most trouble then from his kickouts? Kerry is the one that springs to my mind.
For the press,
for the press,
turnovers, yeah. Look, I think if you're going to get goals against Dublin, then you kind of have to get turnovers high up the pitch. If you're getting turnovers back in your own defence, Dublin are quite set in defence. So
yeah,
if you go after the kickouts like Kerry did that time and they got a couple of turnovers, but like that, it's just you're living off scraps on that, on his kickouts, you know, so you're not going to get many of them, so you need to do well if you do get some. But yeah, Kerry did quite well for a period of time, but he just finds a way.
Yeah, he finds a way, because it was the second half. Remember that he had the mini meltdown? It was 2016, and then second half he didn't put one wrong. Do you know what that?
100%.
But Kerry came with that new press that Dublin do now, where they actually sacrifice a forward or two to get up into space. I don't think any of us had seen that before, but now, like, Dublin do that now, and they're putting kind of pressure on other kickouts that just keep go. It's hard to know what to do, because Morgan did try to go long, and that didn't even work. Because my idea was, when your brain's scrambling like that, get it as far as you can down the field and lose it down there if you're losing it, and you should have enough lads back, you know.
Maybe you should have went with that old basic Galway tactic of putting it out to the wing. So if you lose it high out in the wing, then it's not as damaging. Dublin probably still find a way through. But
if you're going long, you've more time in the air to get to it. You know, it's a longer kick out then, so there's more seconds for guys to go to where the ball is.
To break
is,
it,
so.
To get in on it. But then they should also be, their lads should be getting in under breaks too, if by the same kind of, you know, the same thing.
Yeah, I think because these were just dead straight down the middle, it was Fenton, McCarthy and Kilkenny, and when they were winning, it was just bang, straight through on goal. Whereas
fist straight down,
you had to want it out in the sideline. Even if you had to put it over for a sideline.
Yeah, like,
you
know, stand in front of it.
Yeah, take the ball back.
Kick it out for a 45. Yeah, yeah. And that's the Kerry goalkeeper did that as well. Do you remember that? Was that that was against Dublin too, wasn't it? Yeah. The short kick out that went back over the... Over the, or was it against Mayo? Sorry, it was in the All-Ireland semi-final last year, no? Against one of the games against Mayo, where he went to go short to the cornerback and kicked it out for a 45. But you can't do that anymore, obviously, now, because it has to go...
It was David Clark, wasn't it? I think it was Clark.
Oh, was it Mayo? I thought it was the Kerry goalkeeper.
It was the Kerry goalkeeper.
Oh, you're right. It was the Kerry goalkeeper.
Yeah, no, it was. Right, listen, we've gone over time there. We'll come back with performance of the weekend.
Is the little dink fist pass from a crowded area into that D right home by where Bernard, I've talked to Bernard about, Bernard's very patient. But this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken out, hits the ground and it bounces into a fella's chest, and there's consternation then in around the D and in around that area. Watch for this in the semis and the final. Do you know the one I'm talking about? That little fisted ball that's just bounced in a crowded area, but it gets to the body.
Yeah, you have said it three times.
It's in around it. But you're looking at me. You're looking
at me.
Out
of a crowded area, is it?
You're looking at me with such a confused head in you. It's like I was talking about you trying to get a pointing coppers or something there in a crowded area. Yeah, watch for it.
Paddy Power performance of the weekend, and we have no Tyrone representative on this because I'm actually taking through the team and I can't think of anyone who's even worthy of, like, the Tyrone. It's weird that they got within 6 points having not played particularly well and missed loads of chances, isn't it? Because it's hard sometimes when you analyse these games now, because they're so, like, the players are so all over the place. Like, I mean, it's just such a kind of disorganised game now, isn't it, Dennis? Like,
look how it finished. It was frantic at the end and so opened up, you know, and that's that's when a game is being chased by a team, there's lots of gaps then that's open up, so it's very, the positions kind of go out the window, but it leads to be exciting then at the end because there's lots of goal chances.
There was. And, like, I mean, the perfect players to come on into a broken, disorganised game, like McManaman and McCauley, who just love running at lads. And Costello as well, he got a score from running.
Do you know McCauley only got 10 minutes? And it seemed like he had been on for ages. The amount of possessions he got, just battering through.
He's very hard. He's very unlucky, McCauley, because he's not doing anything wrong. He's playing really well. It's just because John Small, Jack McCaffrey, and, like, because John Small came on the scene, John Small is who messed McCauley up because McCarthy went midfield. Isn't that kind of it? That
you got to play John Small.
Yeah.
He'd done so well in Peter Hart, he was always going to play. The half back line is so strong then, and then James obviously has to play as well.
It's
the options. I wouldn't say, like, the guys that you don't see maybe coming on or getting time, it's not that they're not doing well, it's just you can only play 15 and that's it, someone has to lose out.
See, split Dublin into two, that's it then. It's like, I mean, this is we're going to make the case for this. Kieran Kilkenny, right, so he's the first one for performance of the weekend. He scored 224 from play in the championship this year, so he's top scorer from play. He's 25 and he's 5 All-Irelands. Lads, it's unreal when you think about the impact that this fella and Jack McCaffrey and Mannion, because they came on the scene in 2013 and they won their first All-Ireland, and I remember Kilkenny and McCaffrey were brilliant, and then in semi-final they weren't as good, but they're only bloody chaps, like they were young. Now he's this leader who never drops his head, who is brave, and like, I mean, he could win eight All-Irelands is a conservative estimate for what Kieran Kilkenny could end up with, but he never stops. Like, I mean, I don't know what he's like as a fella. I know he's a real Gael, and he's a Gael Gore, and he's a GA man through and through. And yeah, I was reading the Malachy Clerkin piece there where he was talking about him being eight years old and playing and coming to Munskull and being real nervous before playing in Croke Park in the final, and he's just pure GA, and that's why he came back from Australia, You know, like, I mean, this is the perception I have of him. Is that accurate?
Yeah, look, he just loves to play. That's all he wants to do is play Gaelic football for Dublin. He did decide to come back. It didn't work out in Australia, and we got him back. And you know, he's just developing into it. Obviously, one of the best footballers in the country, and he's been doing it consistently on a consistent level. And you know, now game plans are not form around it, but he's taking control of games and leading games and playing a leadership role on this team. And to have that many All-Irelands at that age he could rack up a good tally if it continues.
A good tally,
on.
Yeah. There's a big smile on Dennis's face as he's saying that. You won't see it on the podcast. But he's this is the thing. Like, he celebrated that last score, but he's playing in full forward sometimes and coming out. Himself and Conn seem to switch positions from the centre and full. And, like, I mean, he's just got that kind of best of both worlds in that he is getting on the end of moves. Because a critique I had of him 2 years ago was against Donegal. He got that man of the match for the 52 possessions, but like, he was just completely overdoing the sideways passing and backways passing, and like, I was making the point that he's much better player than that, and playmakers take risks, and he wasn't taking any risks. But I think he's kind of keeping that hand pass and keeping it ticking over, but also a little bit more risk in his game. You know, he's taking on his man and scoring.
Yeah, he's an excellent shooter of the ball, so you know, you need to get him up close to goal. I think when he's playing out a bit deeper, he doesn't get close to the goal enough.
Yeah.
So then the switch between in and out just gets him on the ball. And
that works better. Because it was one of the games against Mayo that I think it was the first one, 15, and it was after you'd beaten Donegal. I think it was Donegal was in the semi or the quarter anyways, but Kilkenny was on his mad possessions, sideways passing. And against Mayo, that was just slowing down your attacks. And I remember Jason Sherlock running into him. He started the game in the full forward line for the first time, but I remember he was drifting out and Sherlock was waving at him to get back in. And I was wondering, while that might work against the defensive team, against the Mayo team, that kind of slowing it down wasn't doing ye any favours, because Mayo were filtering some bodies back.
Yeah, like, I think he can decide whatever he wants to do on the pitch himself, whatever that instruction was. I'm not sure what it was on that day, but you know, you have good reason to slow down the game. If you look at Tyrone, maybe they should have slowed down the game when they went up to 5 points, and Kieran does that for Dublin. So I suppose when he gets on the ball, he knows what he wants to do. Those guys know what he's going to do with the ball as well, and then everything just revolves around that. And now he's getting the scores on top of it as well. So
has he ever passed you a hand pass and pointed at you to where you're meant to hand pass it after that?
No.
Your experience.
Yeah.
Right, because that seems to be gone as well. I saw him only doing it once yesterday, and I actually think he was pointing at someone else. He was pointing at somebody else to move it on over the far side.
Ever since they lost it against Galway doing it, they probably won't do it again.
Oh yeah. He got turned over doing it. Right, Jack McCaffrey is the next one, lads, and he got the man of the match on Sunday game last night. I heard what a turnaround it is for him, for being going off early in last year's final, cruciate injury, wondering is he ever going to get back. Jeez, if he's nearly back better than ever. Like, I mean,
well,
he's
Kieran did the same injury and came back.
I
thought he was absolutely unbelievable yesterday. The runs that he was making and the turnovers that he made, there was just a huge boost at important times for Dublin. And he was a standout man of the match for me.
Yeah, you can't beat that electrifying pace, though. Yeah. Like, I mean, you just can't beat that. Like, I mean, it just gets you up off your seat. He's exciting. Like, he's just...
Every time he touches the ball, obviously, you can hear the crowd and the fans getting exciting and, stadium lifting. But he's so fast with the ball, you know. It doesn't matter whether he's with or without the ball. He's just got that blistering pace. and it's frightening now when he's coming at you, because he has strong, he can shoot as well, and you see a lot of Dublin's attacks are coming off it. He's running down the neck of the teams, and then you can get the loop on the back.
The loop off the back of that. Like, it is. It's very obvious coming down that left wing. Like, he's either getting through or the lads are coming around him. And it's that pace to get through the lines. Like, it's invaluable in the modern game, though, Dennis, because, like, I mean, breaking through that two or three lads and getting past that, then you're into space. Then you, doesn't happen.
I think we've seen it, yeah, that the pace now is a factor, and teams who do well have got guys who can go by a guy and obviously have that pace and strength and power which Jack has. So look, it's a huge attribute, and Dublin's one of, he's Dublin one of key men, yeah.
Yeah, the there's no doubt.
Like, even off the ball, he's just a dog, isn't he? Like, you know, the way you see him scrapping for possession, you sort of wonder, how is he still so up for this? And like, Morgan tried to kick a couple of balls down in that direction, and it's just like this brick wall where it just stops, and he just comes back out with the ball. Like, you know, it never seems to get moved back by anything. It's just, everything is always going forward. And the point you're making about the loop and how you can see it coming, but we've seen him go the whole way and score goals.
That's the thing.
So you have to scramble. Yeah. You have to just try and stop him scoring a goal.
Yeah, and with that pace, like, I mean, it's even, you see, if Mannion comes on the loop, like, I mean, you nearly have to let him on the loop, because if you get too close, he'll double back and he's gone in. You know what I mean? So it's really difficult to know what to do.
Great pace with Mannion.
That electrifying pace. We saw Mannion take on Shane Walsh up the wing. Shane Walsh gave it off. I was like, geez, no, keep going. I want to see who's faster. But I think Jack McCaffrey's faster than all of them. Would McCaffrey be faster than Mannion?
I think he would be fastest
on the Dublin team. You don't even want to give that away, Dennis. Like, Jesus. Right, Brian Howard, lads. Not brilliant in the first half, but he had an unbelievable second half. And I suppose that catch at the end crowned the whole thing off. Matty Donnelly on him. Bloody debut year. Didn't go on the holiday to impress Jim Gavin, and it bloody worked.
He missed a good holiday.
He'll be on the holiday next year, I can guarantee you that. There'll be no missing that. But I was saying to him, remember back in January when he wasn't doing it, I was like, Jesus, mate, go on the holiday. Like, I mean, you can impress him. But I suppose breaking onto that Dublin team, you nearly have to do something, you know, to get Jim's attention and make him, like,
you don't get too many chances, so, you know, you need to take everything you get on the team. So,
yeah,
and he's done that, two hands. Yeah,
yeah, big time. Like, I think, like, I don't know, like, very few games Brian Howard hasn't been outstanding in. Like, he's third, is he fourth for Player of the Year? I think he should be closer for Player of the Year. In reality, he's been outstanding the whole year.
Who's gonna try?
Kilkenny's favourite, then Jack McCaffrey, then Fenton, then Howard.
Talking about him as a young player, but I think he should be in contention for Footballer of the Year. He's been
the catch at the end, you know.
Unbelievable.
Two things you dream about today. Final, like, it was like the block that Tyrone made.
McGormley, back then.
It was something similar to that.
It was.
You know, except the Dublin were a bit.
And I remember Howard, when Leash were getting a lot of joy with Kingston, he went back as the sweeper. Yeah. So he must be really good in the air, and Jim trusts him.
Huge leap.
Because that's when he was back in around Kavanagh then, because Jim obviously trusts him to go in and for that aerial threat, whereas Dublin fullback line might not be known for being good in the high ball, but Howard is their kind of troubleshooter to go in there.
McCarthy went back in on Kavanagh.
Well, he went back in to Mark Kavanagh,
And that's a good point, because the position that Howard took up for that catch, he was about, you know, 5-10 metres away. He's the one who just commanded the whole thing, and Kavanagh ends up on the ground, and Howard's just running out of the ball.
His momentum, like, is unreal.
In January, you were sort of talking about that holiday that he should have gone on. In February, I was, like, sort of making fun of him for not playing.
We didn't play with DIT either.
I was like, he's not going to get in the Dublin team anyway. You know, Connolly will come back, and Kilkenny, and, you know, I thought that was going to be the thing, but, like, he's just turned around to be one of the most important players. Like,
He has. So listen, well, the message, I still think you should go on the team holiday. I will not, there's nothing going to change my mind on that. But maybe leave off the college one. They shouldn't clash anyways. The college shouldn't clash with the league and make that choice.
He ended up playing for his college anyway in the next round, so listen.
Right, but clashed with the league game, the first one. Brian Fenton, another one, just a machine at this stage. He doesn't tire either. Like, I mean, I don't know he's a freak as well.
The end of games, he's picking off scores and winning important kickouts, you know.
Important kickouts and breaking a pace, and, like, he's not tired.
No.
So what was the one we were laughing at here? It was, poor Kieran Lillis, the Leash midfielder. So he's chasing Fenton down under the Cusack stand. Like, and in fairness to him, he stayed with Fenton, because this was a flat-out sprint. Now, Fenton was solo on it, and Kieran was running after him. and Fenton ends up going down, maybe there was a loop, and I think somebody kicked a pint. Next minute, Kieran is, because at the match, Kieran's just walking back out with his hands on his hips. Fenton's running back out to his position, like at a three-quarter pace, ready back into his midfield. It's just like, that is the difference. Like, that is that difference. How was Fenton not tired that he'd walk back out there? He was running back out to be back into position. It just summed up where they're at.
That's the intensity and the fitness and the strength thing, you know, that's what they have over other teams.
Yeah, no, definitely. So we need to find out. Brian Cullen maybe needs to do a seminar and find out.
Has Brian Fenton ever been tired? That's the question.
What's Fenton's
say he's tired this morning.
Oh, yeah, well, that's for different reasons. Right, finally then, Paul Mannion, because he was in our poll as well. So he missed a penalty against Leash in the Leinster final. He's 5-2 down in an Ireland final. He goes for a height, which is incredibly brave, because that can go over the bar just as easily as anything else. And then, so, like, I mean, that was an incredible penalty. Like, yeah. Connolly was obviously the penalty taker until this year.
There was a long gap. The Tyrone player looked to stay down purposely to try and put him off.
And Morgan was out having a word with him as well.
Yeah, so it was really brave. And he took a knock as well right before that, so... Ah, the finish was unbelievable, yeah. Unbelievable. Yeah. But I think what he did in other areas of the pitch, the turnover that he got, he chased back and he took a ball in the square there where it was hand passed into a Tyrone fella, and he just swooped up and off he headed down the other end of the pitch. So I think when you see your corner forward doing that, coming back and taking balls out of your own square, it's a huge boost to the team. So
yeah, he did that against Tyrone the last time as well. Now he gets more of a chance to do that against Tyrone because their cornerbacks just take off. Yeah, I wouldn't say Mannion necessarily wants to do that. He just he obviously has to do it, and he wants to do that work.
Yeah.
But it's not his ideal scenario. Like, I'm sure when he sees his man going, he's like, oh, for fuck's sake. But the point he got, this is a good thing about Mannion, is that blistering pace again. So when he got that ball in the second half, there wasn't a pint on. But because of it, like, he's a huge man as well. I remember interviewing him, he's huge.
He has that burst, that 5 yards. He can go from 0 to 60 in a really short space of time.
Yeah.
Just has that drive off, that powerfulness again. And he just went by his man and clipped it. Yeah, got 2 yards.
And that's the thing, and it's always, no matter what team you're on, sometimes you just love a score that you don't have to work your arse off to get. You know what I mean? Just, please, Paul, just get us a handy one here, because I'm wrecked. And he can do that. I think that's where Mayo fall down. Sometimes they might not have that fella who can get it wide, take on his man and get that handy score. They have to work that bit harder because they might be lacking that pace that Dublin have.
Yeah.
Another string to Dublin's bow. that's the reality of it, isn't it?
And those players are in every, like, well, most teams hope to have them, where it's like you can just give them the ball and everybody else is so lazy to just stop, and it's like, right, I hope he just takes this on now himself, like, and he's doing that. You're right, Mayo don't have it. I'm going over what you just said, but it was a very good point.
It was a very good point, so you can repeat it. Right, come on, give us the result of the poll here and we'll see who we decide on.
Brian Fenton, fourth place, 17%. Kieran Kilkenny, third, 22%. Paul Mannion, second, 29%. And Jack McCaffrey at the top, 32%.
32%, so fairly close between himself and Mannion. I would have had Kilkenny a little bit ahead of Mannion, maybe. I thought just overall, the three from play. Mannion was very good. So I obviously have the ability to overrule this poll or not, but I'm not going to overrule it. It was between Kilkenny and McCaffrey for me. Like, I mean, I'm in the wing back kind of club. I love an exciting wing back, and McCaffrey is one of my favourite players. So it's Jack McCaffrey, man of the match. What did you see what went on in the Gibson when he was being interviewed last night? A complete malfunction.
Bad advertisement for the Gibson Hotel.
Well, listen, Dublin can have every box tick, but if they can't have an awning up properly, listen, this is just bad organisation. John Costello.
Someone's getting sacked.
That's it. But it was a nice gesture for them to give the match ball to Michael Lester as well. And we obviously have to say, congratulations to Michael Lester on an absolutely brilliant career. Like, I'd be fingers crossed I won't be doing this as long as he has. If I talk about pushing up on kickouts one more time, I'm gassed out after this year. Like, I mean, we will not mention kickouts until next league, which is fantastic. But that's it. Jack McCaffrey performs the weekend. Thanks, Dennis, for coming in. Thanks to our viewers on YouTube. And we'll be back Thursday. We'll do another show on Thursday again. Right, good luck.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and
They regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.